What is the greatest impurity? What is the greatest impurity? I is the greatest impurity. It's not a grammatical error. I is the greatest impurity. Because when we act in the world, if our only focus is I want, I am, I want for myself, for my family, for my happiness, for my success, for my achievement, for my name and fame, then such actions become impure, because then they are colored by greed and selfishness and jealousy and hatred. When I gets converted into we work together. We all work together. We work for the benefit of all. Then that same action, when it becomes a yajna, becomes a sacrifice, any activity that is done without the I and my, without the ego, without the selfishness, working in collaboration, that's what the entire fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita talks about. So in answer to Arjuna's question, Krishna says that yajna, dana and tapa, these are three activities that should not be given up. Because in the scriptures, some people say all activities are contaminated because all of them, all actions result in vasanas, result in more and more bondage. So they should be all given up and one should just go to the forest and meditate. And if they have, a person has that kind of spiritual growth, it may be suitable, but those are a very small minority. They are just like the people, the Buddhas and the Shankaracharyas and the Raman Maharishis. The majority of us need the path of action. And that's why for us, Tyaga, so the sannyasa is giving up of the ego, giving up the actions. Tyaga is the path where you give up the fruit, give up the selfishness, work for all others, and then you, from there you progress to sannyasa, where you give up the sense of ego. Sannyasa again does not mean giving up actions and doing nothing, but sannyasa is the giving up of the ego, the doership, where the Lord alone is doing everything. I am an instrument in his hands. I do nothing, he does everything. So Krishna says last week that yajna, dana and tapa are purifiers. As we said, the greatest impurity is I. So how do you purify? Do yajna. Yajna means activities. Yajna used to mean fire and offering, but now it means activities dedicated for the benefit of all. Dana is charity done for a particular individual or to a particular organization. And tapa is sacrifice for one's own self-improvement. So all those three should not be given up, Krishna says. Why? Because pavanani manishinam, they are the purifiers of the mananashil, the contemplative people, people who are on the spiritual path but need to perform. In fact, all of us need to perform these activities because they purify us. Then the next question is, how should we do these activities? With what attitude? And so Krishna continues that these same activities, what should be the attitude with which we should perform these? So verse number 6, it is on my left today. Verse number 6 is chapter 18. Etan yapitu karmani.
Etan yapitu karmani.
Sangam tyaktva phalani cha. Kartavyani iti me partha. Nishchitam matam uttamam. So etani. So these three, yajna, dana and tapa, these three activities, how should they be done? Sangam tyaktva phalani cha. Sangam means attachment, phala means the fruit. So the attachment and the fruit should be given up, tyaktva. And how should one do them? Kartavyani, it is something that needs to be done. Iti me partha nishchitam matam uttamam. O partha, this is, iti is my matam, me matam nishchitam uttamam, my firm and highest belief, my firm and highest opinion, Krishna says, that these activities should be done without attachment, without fruit, and as kartavyam. It is to be done. There is no question about it. There is no doubt about it. So, in this chapter, Krishna for the first time expresses his opinion. Until now, in the earlier verses, he was saying, prahu, you know, who say vichakshana, the wise people say, prahu manishina. So, he has quoted all the famous wise people of the past, the authors of the Upanishads and the Brahma and all these, you know, the advanced texts that preceded the Bhagavad Gita. But now he says, it is my opinion. Because Arjuna by now knows that he's the one standing in front of him is the Lord of the universe, because he has seen that in the 11th chapter. And so his attitude now is an attitude of reverence rather than just as he's my charioteer or he's my friend. So let us listen to talk a little bit about how one should do the actions. So what is Sangam? Etani, these activities should be done. Sangam tyaktva phalani cha. What is Sangam? Sangam is attachment. What happens is, Gurudev in his commentary says that when I do activities with ego and egocentric, I and mine, for me, for mine, then what happens is, whatever activities we do, we get attached to them. Or whatever objects that I acquire, I develop an attachment. Attachment means I plus I want. I become dependent on that object or that person or that position or that power or that situation. So this dependence, dependence on it makes a person weak. Because then if this object is not there or this person is not there, I am incomplete, I am hopeless, I am useless. So then such a person becomes dependent. Not only that, but then because he needs that object for his happiness or that person, what that person will do, if one of that object gives me happiness, 10 will give me 10 times the happiness, 20 will. So he keeps trying to acquire more and more of whatever it is, more and more of money or power or wealth or position or more and more companies, more and more business, more and more clothes, more and more jewelry. So what happens is that then his activities are conditioned by what will be the fruit, what will I get out of it, looking out for number one. So attachment leads to a dependent on the fruit, that this particular result I need, and that is what will give me happiness. So first it starts with ego, and then it becomes dependence on the result. And so while the person is doing the activity, his mind is already on the result. What will I get? How will I get? Will I be happy? And so his activities are colored by selfishness, and his activities are not efficient, because activities done selfishly can never be efficient, but an activity done unselfishly for the benefit. People say things the other way around. If I don't have my interest, I won't work hard. That is true. A lot of people in this world think like that. But if you look at the lives of great masters, they never thought about themselves. And that's why their activities were so powerful. Jesus only preached to a few disciples. And look, all over the world, people revere him. Look at Buddha. He traveled a few hundred miles on foot. But look at it now. People are respecting him all the way up to China and Malaysia and Indonesia. Swami Chinmayananda, in his life, how far he reached, and the Chinmaya mission has grown 3 times since Swami Chinmayananda left. So these great masters, Shankaracharya, in his short life, how much did he accomplish? He's just walking on foot. So these masters, when they work for unselfishly and for dedicated to the Lord, then the Lord works through them. And so they get 100 times, million times the power that you and I have, because we only work for me, myself, I. And that's why he says, give up that. What can I give up? See, with giving up, we have talked about before also. What can I give up? I can only give up what belongs to me, right? Like if I come to your house and I'm sitting there and somebody comes, asking for a donation. And so this man is sitting and I'm sitting and this person from this temple or organization says we need a donation. So there is this golden, beautiful golden, you know, vase that is worth thousands of dollars. I say, here, you can have this. You can go and sell it. Can I do that? No. It doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the person. If he wishes to donate, it is his choice. I cannot donate something that does not belong to me. So when we donate anything in this world, whom do we take it from? The Lord. This whole universe is his creation. He has created me. He has given me this body, mind, and intellect. Whatever I earn, whatever I acquire, whatever I possess, the house I built, I have taken bricks from what he has made. Steel. Everything that I possess is given by him. So even if I donate anything, I've taken it from him and I'm donating it to him. So what is the greatness in it? If I, like I said, if I take $100 from you and I give it back to you as a donate, it doesn't mean anything. Only thing that belongs to me that I can give up is the ego. The sense of I. That is the only thing that is mine. Everything else I have, this body, mind, intellect, this world, this air, space, water, earth, everything is the Lord's gift. Only thing I have is mine. So if you want to give up anything, give up the ego. Give up this I and my, because that is the main obstacle in our spiritual growth. And when you give up I and my, then he and his comes, or she and hers, you know, if it's the mother goddess. So remember the Lord at all times. Work for him, not expecting anything. I do not want anything, O Lord. I do not expect anything. I do not want anything. But then if I don't expect anything, what will happen? Will I even get anything? You know, then maybe I'll become poor. No. Whatever I deserve, I will get. Nobody can take it from me. Whatever I have worked for, whatever I have put the right effort, the Lord will make sure the karma phala will come to me, whatever I deserve. That's why Gurudev says, you do not get what you desire, you get what you deserve. And so if the Lord feels that that is what I deserve, it will come to me. Nobody on earth can take it away from me. And if I do not deserve it, no matter how hard I work, it will not come. So we should not worry about what will happen in the future, who will take care of my retirement. Everything he will take care of. Just work for the benefit of, out of love for him. Now don't even say I'm working for others, I'm working for you, I'm working for society, I'm working for the community, the country. No, I'm just working out of love for him. I'm just working. That is my only goal. That is my only purpose. Even the idea that I'm serving society can become a sense of ego. You know, I'm such a great servant of society. After Mahatma Gandhi, nobody has come except me. You know, that kind of ideas we get. So let us not get that idea and let us work out of unselfishly dedicating to the Lord and out of love for him. The people say, at least I should get some title, you know, if I'm working for a charitable, at least they should make me president or treasurer or secretary. At least I should get a letterhead with my name in bold letters, you know, gold letters. So when I send letters, people will know what organization I work for. Or at least people should recognize, you know, at least should come and say, thank you, you're doing such a great job. You know, you're such a great servant of the Lord. Or maybe the next election they can, you know, I can be elected to city council or I can become mayor or honorary. The mayor can appoint me the honorary. See, these are all, you know, motives. Service is good, but service should be done with an attitude of love, attitude of sacrifice, attitude of dedication to the Lord. And it should be kartavyam, kartavyani. It should be done. By not doing, I will get sorrow. That should be the attitude. Not that, why should I do it? May I do it? No, I must do it. Like Gurudev in his commentary talks about a couple of examples. Like say you are walking into the mission and see a piece of paper lying. Say, it's not my job to pick up paper. Let the mission people worry about it. Let the janitor come and clean. I'm not the janitor. And I walk away. But then my conscience keeps bothering me. That paper, that paper, that paper, that paper, that paper. I should have picked it up. So it makes me unhappy. So I go back and pick it up. Don't pick it up as a favor to the organization. I pick it up for my own peace of mind, that it was something I should have done. And by not doing it, I get unhappy. I get miserable. So that should be the attitude, that by doing it, I get peace of mind. By not doing it gives me unhappiness. Like you're going and somebody is sitting on the road and crying, weeping. So you say, why are you weeping? Can I help you? He says, look, this is a free country. I feel like weeping, I will weep. Get out of here. Don't bother me. Why are you here? He said, look, I only came to ask you, you know, do you need any help? No, I don't need any help. Why are you disturbing me? Okay, I won't disturb you. Let me at least get you a chair so you can sit comfortably and weep. Don't weep on the floor. So it's not that I don't even know that guy. I have never even met him. But not helping him makes me unhappy, makes me miserable. So when there is some suffering going on, if I can do something to relieve it, I must. Not doing makes me unhappy. That should be the kartavyani. It needs to be done. I do not have a choice, because if I don't do it, I will be unhappy. I will be miserable. And so it's not with the attitude that I'm doing a favor to somebody by helping, that it is giving me peace of mind, because that's a kartavyam. That is very, very important. That attitude one must have. And then the activity becomes spontaneous. Then there is no effort. Then there is no strain. There is no struggle. There is no doubt. There is no question. It is a spontaneous. That's what these saints, the spontaneous outpouring of love. And that is what we see in the life of all these great masters. Then the question is that kartavyani, when we talk about, then are my activities duty, responsibility, or love? Like eating, is it a duty, is it a responsibility, or is it love? It's not a duty or responsibility. I eat because I love my body. I love myself. So that's why I go to the restaurant, get the best food and get the best things I can, and organic and this and that. Why? Because I love my body. So organic fruit, organic vegetable, organic juice, everything I get, so that my body may be healthy. So eating is not a duty, it's not a responsibility, it is an act of love. How about marriage? Is it a duty, responsibility, or love? People say not even that, it's a punishment. None of the three. No, it should be love, you know, because they say na do tan aur ek jaan, you know, in Hindi songs they always have do ek jaan mein do tan and all that. So it is two people living together out of love, out of compassion, out of sharing, you know, so that whatever is there, it is for both of me, for us. Not that it should be a punishment or it should be a sorrow. This reminds me of a little story. So this man was complaining to his mother-in-law. You know, he says, your daughter, you know, my wife, she has this fault, that fault, this defect, ye kami hai, wo kami hai, all these faults she has. So mother-in-law listens quietly, and after a while she says, yes, you're right. That's why she couldn't find a good husband. Good reply. So giving should be an act of love. It's not a duty or a responsibility that I'm giving. It should be an act of love, spontaneous. And that is how one should work in the world. That's how you see Martin Luther King or Mahatma Gandhi or Nelson Mandela, all these, you know, Mother Teresa. Through love they work, not out of, you know, not out of force. Nobody put a gun to their head, you know, look, you have to go out and serve the community. No, it was a spontaneous act of love. And if you want to look around you, look at nature. She gives so much. The sun shines beautifully this morning. Was so beautiful. I went out into the backyard in the morning. The sun was just coming out of the clouds. Air was so clean because of the last night's rainfall. And the birds were chirping. And it was just like the Lord was singing. I mean, there is nothing better than, I told Neeru, I said, go out and just stand in the backyard. It was so beautiful. That is nature just giving her love to us. You look at the flowers in the spring nowadays, they bloom, and the flowers don't care whether you appreciate them or not. They don't do it for appreciation or for praise. You know, they just spontaneously spread their fragrance and their beauty, and they just beautify the atmosphere. They're not looking for, oh, somebody should make me a treasurer or a secretary or a counselor. No, they just spontaneously. The trees, they give us so much sweet fruits, just loaded with fruits, mangoes and figs. And nature is so bountiful, all the grains and all the beauty she gives us. And if you want to see example of giving, go and see the temples or the churches. If you go to the temples in India, thousands of workers have spent so much time just out of love for the Lord. It's just labor of love, whether they get paid or not. They just worked for months and years, carving each little, figure, and the beautiful figures. It's just unbelievable how much effort. And they didn't do it out of, for a pay or a salary. Maybe they did get paid, but their idea was, building God's temple. Look at the beautiful churches. How much effort people have put in all these glass etchings and, all the windows. The example is the Sistine Chapel, where Michelangelo lay on his back. And for months he was painting just, like that on his back and painting the entire ceiling. Years it took him. Can you pay him enough for that? No, today even people go and watch the Sistine Chapel and the Last Supper on the ceiling, and they appreciate the art of this great artist who spent years actually lying on his back and painting, and how he did it, what kind of labor of love. So that is the idea of giving. That is the idea of sharing, not with the idea of getting a paycheck or getting an income or whatever, but this is my service to the Lord. Michelangelo says, I have been given this talent by the Lord. Let me share it in His, glorifying Him. So whatever talent I have, if I have a talent to sing, I sing bhajans. I sing beautiful songs. If I have a talent to paint, I paint. If I have an organizational talent, I organize. I work in an organization. If I have an ability to write poetry, I write poetry in praise of the Lord. So every activity when you do, then every activity becomes a prayer. For a physician, I have an ability to see patients. So patients are the Lord in front of me, a surgeon operating. The Lord is lying down here and I'm serving him or her. And so every activity becomes a prayer. And that is the glory of this person who works without attachment, without depending on the fruit, and kartavyam, it is to be done. Actually, kartavya in Hindi means duty, but in Sanskrit, it means it should be done. Kartavya in Hindi means duty.
Right.
But in Sanskrit, when they say kartavyam, means it is something that should be done, must be done.
Right.
Not out of a sense of duty, but as Gurudev says, not doing it will make me unhappy, will make me miserable. Because it is spontaneous act of love. So that's why. But yeah, but you're right. It is same thing. Duty then should go on into love. It should not, otherwise duty can sometimes become a burden.
Right.
But that's a very good point. Thank you. Yeah, that, oh, I have to do it. If I don't do it, no, like that. It should be should come from the heart, not out of the intellect. So last I was going to talk about the story of King Ashoka. Of course, most people from India have heard it, but it's worth repeating. So King Ashoka inherited the throne in 268 BC. And his grandfather was Chandragupta Maurya. You must have read in the history, was a great warrior. Actually, Alexander had invaded India and conquered some of the northwest of India. And then he went back, but he had left his army there, some soldiers and generals. And they were controlling the northwest of India, the Greek, generals and soldiers. And so Chandragupta Maurya said, these foreigners are in my country. And so what he did was he drove them out. He was a very great emperor, very great warrior. And he did the job of clearing that and so establishing the Maurya dynasty, the Maurya Empire. And then his son was Bimbisara, and then his grandson was Ashoka. And Ashoka was a very powerful warrior. He actually, it is said, he came to power after killing his brothers. And he was very ruthless and very, very power hungry. You know, he was mad about power and he started expanding his kingdom. And it is said from east to west, the entire India he had captured and even up to central India. And now there was only a little bit of southern India left. And he said, once I get that, I'll be the unquestioned master of, very ruthless warrior he was. So he then, the only thing stood in his way was the kingdom of Kalinga. Kalinga was the very powerful kingdom, Orissa, and then extended towards the middle of India. And he said, once I conquer Kalinga, then the other southern states are very small, small states. I'll have no problem. You know, within a few months, I'll be the unquestioned leader of whole of India. So he sent his general with a powerful army to Kalinga. Now, Kalinga was a very interesting state. In those days, it was actually a democracy. It was, even though there was a king ruling, but the king had to follow a set of laws that were set aside by elders in the past. So there was a constitution, there was a rule of law, and the king had to follow it. And the king was there for the welfare of the people. King was not there for his lot of kingdoms. You know, kings, they worry about themselves, how they can get rich and their pleasure and their fun. No, the king was answerable to the people. It was a very interesting state in those days. This is 250 BC. But the people of Kalinga were very proud warriors. They were very proud about their culture and about their state and about their country. You know, how they are maintaining that, you know, this tradition. And so Ashoka said, I need to destroy this Kalinga. That's my only obstacle. So he sends his general, several thousand troops, and they get defeated. You know, the Kalinga warriors just defeat them and send them back. So Ashoka is very angry, you know, who dare to stop me? Then he himself gets into the war and takes his entire army. Said, I need to crush the Kalinga. And the battle goes on for several days. And by the end, there is nobody left alive in Kalinga. No man. 100,000 men were killed. All the young and healthy men were killed because they all were in the war. And Ashoka himself lost about 10,000 soldiers, but 100,000 of the Kalinga soldiers were killed. And so Ashoka, then, you know, as any victorious emperor, you know, now the whole country has been taken over. My soldiers are running. They are in the palace, the generals, and he himself is, of course, leading. So he said, let me drive through this country and see what I have conquered. And so he's driving in a chariot, and everywhere he sees, you know, dead bodies and blood, and then women crying and children crying and just sorrow. And suddenly, you know, these words come out of his mind. What have I done? These are very famous words. He says, what have I done? And normally, otherwise somebody wins a war, they celebrate. Aha, you know, we have won. But he was so saddened. He was so shocked that what kind of a person am I? You know, I have caused so much tragedy to so many people, so many widows and so many orphans and so much destruction to this beautiful kingdom. And then he gave up. He said, I'm not going to fight anymore. He became a man of peace. He could have easily conquered those remaining South Indian states. He said, no, he just extended a hand of peace to them, that you are our neighbors and we'll have peace. And you think his kingdom would have suffered? His kingdom actually flourished because he made trade open. You know, we'll trade with our neighboring states. You know, open trade. You know, like even now they talk about whether we should have open trade with Mexico or Canada or not. And there's so much. Open trade is always good. Just let the goods flow. And then he, in his own kingdom, he said the money will be for the people. It's not for me. So he has built roads. He built, you know, rest houses for people to stay. He planted trees. He brought respect for all religions. All religions will be respected equally. He had these principles of, you know, he became a Buddhist and developed these principles of peace and non-violence. And he made these stupas, these iron pillars throughout his kingdom with all these messages of love and compassion and sharing. He said everybody should read these and everybody should follow. If one of them is still there, we still have one of the stupas that's, you know, 2,000 years old, because the particular metal they used, it never rusted. That kind of tech. So 2,000 years, we still have that. And so, not only that, but his whole kingdom became a land of peace and milk and honey, and the people prospered because instead of spending money in war, he spent money in development. Instead of making more and more weapons, he made more and more plows. You know, they say making, you know, swords into plows. Then he sent his ambassadors, you know, to spread this message to the Southeast Asia, to, you know, Burma and Nepal and, you know, China and Japan and, you know, Southeast Asia and Indonesia, Malaysia. All those countries adopted Buddhism and adopted these ideas. So you can see that how one individual, even though he caused so much tragedy, after that he caused so much goodwill, not only in India, but in so many other countries. So here we see that this individual, who originally was just working for I and my, when he changed his thinking, he became a source of goodwill. He became a force for good. And so these are the kind of examples of people. And otherwise, you look at Alexander and Genghis Khan and all these, you know, the more they conquered, Caesar, the more they became greedy. I want more. I want more. I want to conquer more kingdoms. Hitler. But there are very few people like Ashoka who, even though he succeeded, but then he changed himself and became a force for good. So that is how one should do, you know, that these activities of yajna, dan and tapa should be done without ego, without working for the fruit, without I and my, and with a spontaneous, you know, attitude of love. So that is the essence of this verse. Any comments, any questions? And his, by the way, his motto, his Ashoka's motto was Bahujan Sukhaya, Bahujan Hitaya. So my activity should be for the pleasure of all and for the benefit of all, for the happiness of all. I should work for the happiness of all and for the benefit of all. So that became his motto, that whatever I do should benefit everybody and make everybody happy. Like we say, na, sarve bhavantu sukhina, sarve santu niramaya. When we chant, may everybody be happy, may everybody be free from disease. Any questions?
So they probably had something within them to cause that change.
Yes, I'm sure. Right. Or sometimes a major catastrophe, like what happened with Ashoka, you know, where he's that thing had such a powerful impact on him that from becoming a very violent ruler, he became a peaceful ruler. Yeah, but maybe he had something in him, could be, or it so profoundly affected him, you know. But you're right, he may have had some goodness underneath that came out. That's a good point. I'm sorry?
Valmiki,
yes. Yeah, Valmiki. He was Ratnakar. Yeah, he was a dacoit, and how he changed just by meeting the right guru, the right teacher. I think if the person feels offended by offering help, you could say that, you know, that if there's anything I can do, I'm available, and then just leave it at that instead of forcing yourself upon that person. You know, I know if there is anything I can do, just express sympathy if the person is going through a hard time, if you can. But if the person doesn't even want that and is very rude, and you can just mentally pray for that person and then just be available in case the person changes his attitude. Like that person, you know, crying on the road, weeping, and he says, I don't want your help. I don't want even you to come and talk to me. Then just, you know, say, okay. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschid dukkha bhag bhavet. Om shanti shanti shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.